The G20 gets underway, but what's it all about?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world and how it affects the United States. Leaders of 20 of the world's biggest economies are meeting in South Korea today. Over the next few days, we're going to hear a lot about how the G20 will tackle currency manipulation and trade wars, among other things. But we thought we'd give you a little primer of what the G20 really is and how it's going to affect the global economy. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is here, live from London, to break it down for us. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
So, all right, the 20 biggest economies, that sounds like a big deal, is it?
Yes, certainly. I mean, these are the leaders of the 19 richest economies, including the US and China, plus the European Union as a group. Between them, they represent 85% of the global economy, so pretty significant.
All right, so a powerful bunch, but how effective is it in working together?
Well, the G20 became the world's main economic forum in 2008 as the global economic crisis began to unfold. And the body did prove effective then by these countries getting together and agreeing to coordinate policies and stimulate their economies. Here's Sean Rickard, senior economist at the Cranfield School of Management.
I think they probably prevented a 1930s-type slump sweeping across the world. So one has to say it does have its uses. It has been very successful.
But, Stephen, the global economy hasn't fully recovered. I mean, can this group score another success at this meeting?
Oh, it seems much less likely. We're out of the immediate crisis. The panic subsided. Minds are not quite so concentrated. And there are big divisions. I mean, some countries feel they should cut their debt. Others, like the US, want to continue with the stimulus. And we've got that bitter row over currency manipulation between China and the US. It was all a lot easier when the old G7 was the main economic forum, when the US ruled the roost with its European allies. But those days are long gone. Now we've got to cooperate with many more players.
Certainly remember those G7 days. All right, Stephen, thanks.
Okay, Steve.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in London. The number of homeowners who got a foreclosure notice in October dropped by 4%. That's according to foreclosure listing firm Realty Track. Seems like good news, no? But Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports there are still plenty of people in danger of losing their homes. It's just that paperwork issues are slowing things down.
Realty Track attributes the decline in foreclosures to the robo-signing controversy, where banks were caught seizing properties without going through the proper legal hoops. Investigations have slowed foreclosures down, but they should rebound, says Desmond Lockman at the American Enterprise Institute.
This whole issue with robo-signing, all that is going to do is stretch out the length of time that it'll take the property market to find a bottom.
Lockman says the underlying problems causing people to stop paying their mortgages aren't getting better either. Those would be unemployment and homeowners who owe more than their house is worth. And with foreclosed properties flooding the market, Lockman says home prices will keep falling.
A weakness in the housing market just heightens the risk that the United States could experience a double-dip recession.
Right now, foreclosure rates are worst in Nevada, Florida, Arizona, California, and Michigan. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Shares in Europe are mixed at the moment. Everyone pretty much flat. Investors holding their breath while the G20 goes on. Asian markets were higher today. Yesterday, the Dow added 10 points to close at 11,357.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Vanguard, whose mission is to simplify investing and to help people reach their financial goals at vanguard.com/public radio. By Toyota. Toyota is sharing technology and ideas for a better world. Learn more at toyota.com/ideas for good. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention lists diabetes as the 7th leading cause of death in the United States. High obesity rates, a big contributor. But India isn't as developed as the United States, and a big rise in diabetes cases in that country is startling doctors and the government. Jason Gale is a health and science reporter for Bloomberg, and he writes about an Indian diabetes epidemic in this month's Bloomberg Markets magazine. Jason, welcome to Marketplace.
Hey, Steve. How you doing?
Doing well. What set you off on this path?
A couple of years ago, I was on a field trip in the Indian city of Bangalore that looked at a diabetes project there. A group of healthcare workers test people's feet. And as I watched the podiatrists and the healthcare workers, I was really struck by the people in whom they were diagnosing type 2 diabetes. We associate type 2 diabetes with a lifetime of overeating and inactivity. In rural India, and healthcare workers are finding it in men and women in their 30s and 40s who are physically active and who are not especially fat. It just seemed totally bizarre to me.
What is it, Jason, about the rising middle class in India? Why is there such a jump in cases of diabetes with those folks?
Well, I think it's a combination of many things, like changes in diet. People were eating a lot more refined rice than they were 20 years ago. But there's a legacy of poverty, which has really set Indians up for developing obesity and the diseases with it much earlier than people who haven't experienced malnutrition, particularly in the womb and right from the start.
I didn't realize, Jason, only 5% of the Indian population has health insurance. What kind of economic impact is that having?
A study in 2007 found that diabetes costs the Indian GDP at 2.1% every year. So that's a huge cost, and it's mostly in lost earnings and productivity.
That's amazingly large, right?
It is. And the World Bank came out with a study in January that found that if India could eliminate all its non-communicable diseases like diabetes and heart disease, the $1.3 trillion economy would be 4 to 10% greater in size. So that's a substantial amount of money that would be gained by eliminating these diseases.
Jason Gale is a health and science reporter for Bloomberg with us from Singapore. Jason, thank you.
No worries, Steve. Cheers.
And finally, security is tight at the G20 in South Korea. Thousands of armed police are keeping order, and so are 6 goldfish enlisted for bathroom duty. The fish will be placed in the water supply to ensure purity. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.